Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, social critic, and mental health consultant. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Brian.
What's on your mind this week?
I have a lot on my mind this week, as always. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
You don't look too sleep-deprived, new daddy that you are.
Yeah, we've got a good system worked out where we each get to sleep 6 hours. We each take a turn feeding and walking the baby at night.
Did you ever think that 6 hours would feel like a luxury?
No. It's pretty amazing.
I know. It's funny how your standards of life alter quickly.
Yeah, very much so.
And you find people and you say to them, oh my gosh, I slept 6 hours and it was incredible.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad things are going well at home at your house and that you're creating your family and your dynamics of how you and your wife, your partner, mm-hmm. are working these things out, because it's all the essential parts of our mental health is how well our connections and relationships go week to week, right?
Right.
I mean, we really are a product. Our mood and our emotions and our attitudes are always a direct reflection of how well our relationships are going. And it's funny that we don't spend enough time just talking about that, you know, running into someone who might be grumpy or, you know, flip you the bird or cut you off, right? Say something rude. And of course, I'm like everyone else. My first reaction is like, oh, they're so grumpy, or why are they being so mean? But I wonder if we stop down once in a while and say, gosh, are you having a tough day? Or, you know, how are things going for you? If we assume that all people, you know, want to be in good spirits, but something's holding them back. And if we asked someone, you know, gosh, how are things going? You look a little down. And someone is able to say, oh, you know, I'm really struggling because I'm not getting enough sleep. I have a new baby. Or I'm having a hard time because I'm really struggling with my communication with my teen. Think how different that relationship or that moment would go if you had that human contact. Mm-hmm. So I guess what's on my mind this week is a little bit of feedback from the show last week, where we talked about our legacy. And I was talking about, you know, our elders, the older generation, thinking about what it is you want to leave behind, and not monetarily or materialistically necessarily, but what kind of legacy of values, what kind of personality traits, what kind of family story or history that you want to leave behind, because your modeling of your life will create the quality of life for the generations to come. You know, we talk about living for 7 generations beyond us, that we should be living our life in a way that the impact on those 7 generations beyond us will be benefited by how we lived, you know, how we take care of the environment or how we treat each other. Because as a therapist, you know, I and all therapists who go through the training understand that we look at families as systems, and that families can only be as healthy as all of the members of that system. And if one person is struggling, it impacts everyone else in that family. And we also know that our children in many ways recreate the lives that we've lived. Right. If oftentimes my daughter will say something to me and it's as if I just spoke it to myself, and hearing it come back to me from my daughter is a little horrifying. You know, I can hear things that I've said to her in different ways come back at me. And it reminds me that every day the way I live my life sets up for my children a model for the way they'll choose to live their life. And I don't think we talk about that enough. And I wonder how we would change some of the choices we made in our life if we were always cognizant of the fact that the health of our marriage, or the health of our communication skills, or the health of our moods and our well-being. Our children are watching these every day, and they will be unconsciously and consciously making choices in their lives that reflect how we live ours. So legacy is on my mind still, because someone nicely posted on my Facebook page, I need to think more about my legacy, because whether I plan to leave something behind or not, I'm leaving something behind. And I said, yes, bingo, that's it. We need to consciously look at our lives so that we know what we're modeling is what we do want our children and grandchildren to carry with them. So I guess today our overall theme is family. And as much as we need to be connected and you know, our whole drive in life is to work on those connections and to have relationship, our family can oftentimes be the source of everything that makes us crazy. It's the most common thing that people want to talk about is, I love these people so much, and yet I can't stand spending more than 5 minutes with them. How do I do this? What do we do? And it is our dilemma. So we're going to talk about family stories and, you know, what is your family story? What prevents you from spending time with your family, your extended family, even your immediate family? You know, how do you struggle in family gatherings? What can we talk about today to help each other make it easier in our family functions? We've got Easter coming up this weekend. It's a big function for my family and extended family. As a matter of fact, we're going to have 25.
My goodness.
Yes, 25 at the Easter dinner on Saturday night. We have a lot going on. We have 5 or 6 birthdays in the month of March. My daughter recently got engaged, so we're having a little engagement party for her, and another couple in the family is getting married. So it's a lot of celebration, a lot of families, a huge age range from 80 down to 2. So everybody's got their special needs and the things that they, you know, want to have taken care of. So 25 people for the weekend and making sure that it goes smoothly. We're all excited to be there, and I think probably everyone in my family has their own levels of anxiety about what buttons are going to be pushed or, right, if it's going to go well. So what goes on, you know, for your family around these holidays, and how do you manage? You're welcome to call in. Our number is 781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and you can always find me on Facebook. I haven't noticed you on Facebook yet, Brian.
Oh, I'll have to friend you.
That's right. Friend me on Facebook. Come to The Reluctant Therapist. Like the page, and I post all information and shows, or you can make comments. And you can also email me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. So what do you do for this? Is this a Easter? Is it any sort of holiday that your family recognizes?
I didn't even realize that Easter was this weekend. So we don't have plans. We've been pretty preoccupied with he's 3.5 weeks old now, our son, and we've got his grandpa visiting from Portland, just getting in today, and he'll be here till Saturday. So we were kind of just focusing on that chunk of time. Mm-hmm. And Sunday, I think, is just our day off, where we have nothing to do with the three of us.
Well, you'll be hopefully eating chocolate. and you might find that over the next couple of years, you know, that you're going to start bringing in some of those traditions of the basket and the bunnies and egg hunts. And
right. Definitely.
I know. And then start negotiating and having your father-in-law coming into town and making space for him and making sure his accommodations work. It's all those are the challenges in our life. The other thing that stuck out for me this week, aside from the legacy conversation we had last Tuesday, was an article that I read in the New York Times that talked about the stories that bind us. And it was an interesting article that just reminded me how passionate I am about story, and that we really are a product of the stories we tell about who we are and our lives. And this article talked about a lot of research that's been done over the years, how we've become much more savvy about what works with families, how to keep families intact, how to keep, you know, the mental health of our families. And yet that information is not readily available to the common person. You know, that information is in textbooks or in research journals, you know, or published in different areas. But it's not something that you read about in the paper or that we're given easy access to, which is a shame, because those things that we can do to help our families stay healthy and functioning aren't that complex. You know, it's not rocket science. You know, it's not that far out there. But because we don't have the information, and we tend to feel like when things are going wrong, or we're struggling in our relationships, or we're feeling annoyed by someone, that we're the only ones that struggle with these things. And it's easy to feel like our families are struggling in their own unique ways. But the interesting thing is that we found that families struggle in very similar ways. The things that one family has a hard time with is similar for a lot of different people. And if we talk about those things, if we talk about those things that we struggle with, it can quite often make it easier to deal with and easier to move forward. So the article talked about one of the key components when they looked at families that were doing well, or children that were thriving and doing well. One of the key components were these children tended to know the most details about their family history. You know, minute details like, where were your grandparents born, or how did your parents meet? Or what did your grandfather do for a living? What was an illness or a tragedy or a crisis that happened in your family in previous generations that they were able to overcome? And what they found is that when children knew these detailed parts of their family history, they felt like they were a part of a greater whole. It made them feel like their own life was connected to a greater group and gave them strength and resilience. But it also helped them to deal with crises and challenges in their own lives, because they felt like their family was a strong support and had been through crises and struggles before. And because they had this history of overcoming, they themselves could overcome. So one of the most simple things we can do in our families is to tell stories, is to get together at our group gatherings and tell the family history. That I think I've said to you in the past that my dad is a huge storyteller.
Yes.
Yeah. And at 75, he is at this point the leader of our tribe, as we call him. You know, we're a pretty big family system, but my dad would definitely be the leader of the tribe at this point. And he has told stories our whole life at the holiday parties. And we actually have a family Christmas story and a family birthday story and a family Easter story. And they're not generally the stories of grandiose excitement that's happened in our lives or great moments of triumph. They tend to be stories that have been not our most stellar moments as family. And we look forward to those. We actually can laugh about it now, but they also are reminders that our family has had struggles and we have had things that have happened that have caused us to reevaluate who we are. And so these family stories, our family histories, are things we look forward to talking about, but they also are the way we know who we are as a family. So the other piece of this knowing our family history is also how we tell the story about who we are. Think about that. When someone says, tell me a little bit about your family, what's the first thing you say? Is it, we're awesome, we're strong, we all get along, we all enjoy each other, or is it, oh my God, I dread spending any time with them? What's that first thing?
For me, It's, I think I say we're weird. Not bad, not good. I used to think it was a bad thing, and now I like it a lot. It's a good thing.
Which is the beauty of maturing and getting older and now also being a father, right? A lot of the things that you were completely annoyed about when you were young, you're starting to go, oh, I kind of get it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what other people think as long as we're having fun and we're happy.
Yes. And
used to be embarrassed about it.
Absolutely. And isn't it funny, because I think some of the things about families that make them weird are the things that the kids most secretly love.
Right.
You know, I think there's some artwork and some traditions we have in our family and stories that we tell that my teenager absolutely dies a thousand deaths about if her friends find out. But she would be crushed if we did not do the traditions the same way. Kelly, you're on the phone with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind today?
Hi, how are you, Elizabeth?
I'm good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Well, I guess I'd like to touch on a few things you talked about. I think that when I think about my family, the first thing that comes to mind is just that we're really close. Mm-hmm. And we don't hold back. We kind of tell each other whatever's on our mind. And that can be a good and a bad thing. But I also wanted to touch on something that you had mentioned earlier, just about, you know, around holidays and just any time you're around family. You know, you love these people so much, and for me, I miss them when I'm away, and I love being around them. But, you know, at the same time, there's certain things you can't stand about them.
Right.
And something that's been on my mind a lot lately is I have a younger sister who's in, or is not, I'm not sure what her relationship status is, but she's been in a very, very bad relationship. Mm-hmm. Just a guy who treats her terrible. And they've been together for a long time. And like I said, I don't know their relationship status now, but I know that they still see each other. And it's really difficult for us as a family, because when we get together, and like I said, we love being together, we're very close, but I feel like there's been this really big void between my sister and the rest of us, because, like I said, we don't hold back. We tell her all the time how much we hate this guy, how much we hate that she's with him. And even though at the same time we know that it's kind of pushing her away because she just almost resents us for saying, for mentioning it so much, but we can't help ourselves, you know?
Right. So what do we do with that, right?
It really has been a big void, you know? It's almost become an awkward silence now whenever we're all together and we're around my youngest sister. And I don't know how we move past that,
okay.
other than her just not being around him at all, you know?
Well, I think that's a great question because I think it's common for a lot of families. And it comes up, it's like, you know, if we have feelings about a situation, we can never express them because if someone's feelings hurt, then they want to leave. So do we not talk about it? But then everyone knows it's there, right? So what you're talking about is that underlying tension that's there, is that the elephant's in the room. Everyone's expressed how they feel about your sister's relationship, can't keep bringing it up, and yet it exists. And so,
right.
So one of the things that I suggest is something that you've already mentioned is, you know, to come with her with as much love, with as much love as you do with the concern. And as you've mentioned, you know, one of the problems we get into in families is that we'll express our concern and then it pushes our family member away, or it oftentimes builds that relationship stronger because they feel like it's them against the family. So if you can, you know, have your say like you did, and quite often having our say in a card or a letter is better than trying to do it face to face because it tends to make people feel defensive. But if you have something you want to say, but to make sure we use the cookie method. And the cookie method is you start with a compliment. Here's, you know, I love being with you and you're so fabulous and strong and you've made great choices. And then the center of that cookie is, I'm concerned a little bit about this choice. I know ultimately you'll do what's right for you, but I really want you to know that if I can help you, or if there's something you want to talk about, I'm there for you. And then the bottom of the cookie is, but you know that I love you and I want the best for you. So I encourage you to try that cookie method, maybe do something in writing, and to continue the conversation, even if it's uncomfortable to say, I feel this tension in the room in our family. How can we make this better? Because quite often we think if we ignore something, it'll go away, but it doesn't. The tension remains there and it makes it really uncomfortable. So to say, I feel tension, how do we fix it, is a first step. And Kelly, I appreciate your call and I wish you well on your holiday gathering, and I wish you well with your sister.
Right. Thanks so much. Thanks for your advice.
Having a great day.
Okay, you too.
Hi, Alan. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk briefly about losing a parent. I lost my mother when I was 5.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had a brother that was 9 at the time, and my sister was 7. And it just, I think it throws everything into turmoil. And I don't know if age is a factor in how we all reacted to that. You know, the bonds at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me that I may have reacted differently than my brother, my oldest brother, who seemed to be very angry all his life.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up. But I think it ultimately led to us growing really apart, and we pretty much are estranged from one another, even though we see each other occasionally. I wouldn't call it normal sibling relationships.
It's not what you desire.
Well, it's not. I don't know. Sometimes I try to reconcile it in my mind, you know, that it's okay that I don't have these relationships with my brother and sister. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I should try to mend things if I don't really have the desire, or I'm kind of at a crossroads. Trying to decide whether or not there's a benefit there for me to mend fences. But
how old are you now, Alan?
I'm 52.
So it's interesting because, you know, and I'm not a huge Jung student, but one of the things I understood about his work is that quite often he felt that we really couldn't do any of our healing work until we were 50 or older because we didn't have enough life experience to do any of the work. So it's interesting that your timing is right in that point where we start to reflect on our life, and Jung would say we start doing that healing work of all of our childhood wounds. And so if there were a time to dive in, this would be a great time to explore that. And I'm also wondering, were you able to find family in other relationships?
You mean like my mother?
Like without your siblings being, you know, the center or...
I think, my partner's family has become closer. I would say that we spend more time with that on that side of the family.
So you were able to create that familial bond.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have some family bonds. that way. But, I mean, my brother and my sister, they live relatively distant. You know, one's in Oregon, one's in Sacramento, so they're not readily available anyway. But
right. You'd have to make an effort, right? You'd have to really kind of call in the... So tell me what your hopes would be to bring everyone together. What would be your perfect picture?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I miss just what other people seem to have with their siblings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I can be maybe a little jealous or, wishing I had a little bit of that. Because it does tend to get a little lonely, I suppose, you know, at the holidays when you have these huge walls, you know, that seem like miles thick that mm-hmm. you can't get through to contact or to reach out to them. So
right, and after so many years, it starts to almost feel awkward, right? We've gone this long. If I were to just call out of the blue, would that feel too weird? And how do we make up for this time? A little bit of that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I just kind of wanted to give my side of relationships that are not so great. You know?
Right. Well, and I think I appreciate you calling because I think your story is a lot of people's stories. I know in my immediate family, my husband hasn't been close to his siblings, and they live actually quite close in distance. And I think it was always a struggle because my immediate family is very close, and he just kind of became part of our group and has happily done that. And now we're in our early 50s, and just in the last 2 years, he has a sibling that reached out. And I can't tell you how great that's been for him. And it was just a simple reach out and then a phone call here or there and then a visit, and it's just kind of slowly built. And that connection's been really meaningful for him. So I can only give you that anecdote mm-hmm. that was really nice to make that one connection, because our siblings do carry our history, right? They're our closest blood relationship on the planet. Siblings either do really well together or they struggle or they're somewhere in between. But it's always a relationship worth pursuing and nurturing, because when we look in our siblings' face, we see the history of our generations before us and generations to come. So there are some small things, and I'm so big on the narrative, on the letter writing of expressing ourselves in kind of that neutral way, so that when people hear the words, they can read them instead of having to kind of have that face-to-face coming up with a response, but to be able to write something that you felt and reach out in that way and give them an opportunity to think about it and maybe respond, I would feel would be a great first step.
Okay.
I really appreciate you calling
in. Thanks for your insight.
Thanks, Alan. Have a great day.
Okay.
So we're talking about family, and as you can tell, it's a really important issue because we all have different levels of relationships with those who we come from, and I think we all have this desire, this innate desire to tell our story. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can join in at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875 for our listeners out of the area. What goes on for you in your relationship with your family? What are some of the things you might struggle with at family gatherings? What prevents you from being close to your family? Or what is your family story? Because we all have them. We all have a way we describe who we come from. Brian mentioned earlier that the first thing he thinks of is, my family's weird. And as he gets older, his family's weird in a great way.
Absolutely.
My family, my first thought is that we're loud. And very over the top and very theatrical. There's a lot of big personalities that you can imagine in my family. And I talked about my dad's a big storyteller. My mom is an amazing storyteller. A lot of wicked wit in my family, wicked, wicked wit and sarcasm. So you have to be able to tell a story quickly because our attention span's very short. You have to be able to take a little ribbing and deal with that. You know, there is a personality of our family when we're together as a whole that you can see that when we're individual, when we're in our lives individually, we might not behave exactly the same way. But there's kind of a survival mentality that comes together when we all get together in a group and we learn to function. And I have to say that I didn't always function that great within my family because I became a family therapist, right? So there's a reason why I was is curious about what makes relationships work or not work, and the things that I struggled with within my very strong tribe, and trying to find, you know, my individual self and still be a part of that collective we, right? That whole group that is my family. I still want to be a part of that, and yet in many ways I kind of felt like the outsider, or like I didn't belong, or they somehow, you know, got along so well and I felt like I was not living up to what they expected or didn't do things the right way. And what I realized the older I get and the more education I have and the more time I have to talk with other people and hear their stories. I mean, I have the opportunity to hear stories every day, which is why we do this radio show, because I didn't want to be the only one getting to hear these amazing stories. Because the more that people came to me to tell me their story, the more I felt like, wow, my story isn't so strange, right? My family isn't that bizarre or that difficult, that I'm just part of a whole culture of families that are trying to make it work and trying to stay together and maintain their sanity when they are together. And the more I realized that everyone struggles in unique ways and struggles in similar ways, the more healing I was able to have with my own family relationships. And so that's what we're trying to do today, is talk about some of those things we struggle with in our families and how can we learn to cope with them, deal with them, accept them, change them if possible, so that we can have healthier family relationships and therefore better mental health. Jeremy, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Family.
All right, Jeremy, tell me about it.
Well, I love my family dearly. I just wish I loved being around them.
Yes.
I left most of my family back in Virginia when I moved out here to California. Mm-hmm. And that was actually great for me.
In what ways?
The separation. I had long been sort of the facilitator of the family,
mm-hmm.
and had just run into lots of frustration in that role. And so I sort of abandoned that role. And that just freed me up to worry about myself, I guess, for a while.
And so now how have you changed?
I would say I've changed by, I feel like I love them on a purer level, yeah. Where I guess absence has made the heart grow fonder a little bit.
You can appreciate them from a distance.
Absolutely, without having to be immersed in the day-to-day, you know, stuff of my family.
Right, because it sounds like the role that you kind of were put into when you were living there was a role that you weren't comfortable being stuck in.
Well, I wasn't comfortable that we weren't comfortable with each other. You know,
right.
I wasn't comfortable that we're all good, caring, loving people except with each other.
So I wonder how that will be as you age. How old are you now?
I am 43.
All right, good. So I wonder.
It was interesting hearing you talk about how the healing, yes. You know, when you're in your 50s, I've been trying for the last 25 years with my family, honestly, to heal, to have us heal.
I wish you had called me when you're 50, because I would have said, now's the time, Jeremy.
Because I've had lots of practice, so, you know, it should come easy, I guess, at that point.
And I wonder, because one of the things I've noticed is that I tend to struggle most in my relationships when I'm not feeling good about myself. And that comments tend to have more sting, you know, when there's a nugget of truth in that. And that the older I've gotten, the better I feel about who I am and what my life is about, the easier it is for me to be in all of my relationships.
Right. And yet I've been faced with resentment. Oh, it's like, oh, look at you, you know, feeling so good about yourself.
Yes.
You know? And I'm like, yeah, I am. And you should too. Join the party.
Exactly. And I love that you said it, because I think our first reaction would be, you know, you resent that I feel good about myself, and so I'm going to dislike you for resenting me, and it starts that cycle. But what you're saying is, I just come back at them with love. You know, realize that we're all messy. We're all good and we're all bad, right? We're pieces of all those things in our life. And when people that we love have a difficult time expressing that love, if we just love them more, sometimes it helps. And if we need to keep our distance a little bit, like you found, it's that, then you find the dance of, how do I stay close with you but far enough away that I can be healthy?
That is my dance. You've summed that up perfectly.
Well, I appreciate you sharing, because I know it's a dance that a lot of people do, and I think hearing your story really helps.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jeremy. It's 2:30, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our phone number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to talk about family or any other topics about relationships that come up for you, we'll be back to take a call from Kristen.
You are listening to The Reluctant Therapist on Public Radio KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. On today's episode, we remember Anthony Lewis, former New York Times reporter and columnist. He died Monday at the age of 85 from complications of renal and heart failure. Also, after England and France went to war with Germany in 1939, there was a ferocious debate in America over whether the U.S. should come to their aid or even go further and enter the war. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the isolationist and interventionist with Lynn Olson, author of Those Angry Days, Roosevelt, Lindbergh, and America's Fight Over World War II. Join us at 3 o'clock for Fresh Air, then at 4:30, it's All Things Considered. That's all coming up here on KCBX. You can call in and join the conversation with Elizabeth at 781-3875. That number again is 805-781-3875.
You know, Brian, one of the things that's so difficult is that families took a huge hit in the 70s. You know, we've been changing and morphing family structures forever and a day. But in the 70s, with all of the radical social change that we went through with the feminist movement and moving out of the kind of really repressive, oppressive 50s and trying to redefine male and female relationships, you know, families really kind of got lost in the struggle. Kids got lost in the struggle. And one of the things that came up also in the 70s was the real rise of therapy and people really jumping on the therapy bandwagon and wanting to go in and get help and deal with all their issues. And, you know, again, I am the reluctant therapist for a reason, and one of those things I struggle with is I think one of the ways we got off track is in the 70s we started talking about dysfunctional families. That became the buzzword, that everyone who was struggling came from a dysfunctional family. And so everyone was encouraged, leave that family behind, go find yourself. If it's not working out, separate yourself, get divorced. You know, think about it. It was very much individual pursuit of happiness. But as a result, we also saw a huge rise in sense of isolation, alienation, depression, anxiety. And I think there's a real connection between those rises in mood disorder and the kind of dissolving of a lot of families that were dysfunctional. But here's the problem that you don't hear, is that when they talked about dysfunctional families, you would think that they would define someone as dysfunctional when they had a model of functioning, right?
Right.
Well, through all the research and all the years that they looked for dysfunctional families, they never were able to identify a functional family. They have traits of what strong families look like, but there was never like this ideal, every family needs to look like this. And so we identified and diagnosed a lot of people as coming from dysfunctional families, but we had no idea of what they needed to do to change to be part of a functional family. We ended up creating a lot of individuals who were alone in the world, but we weren't creating functional families. We weren't coming back and helping people heal and be more functioning. And so that's where I think we really struggle today, is that we're quick to say, my family is dysfunctional, so therefore I'm not going to spend time with it or I need to leave, instead of saying, my family struggles in these ways and here are some ways that we can function better and here are some things I just need to accept and live with and kind of, you know, deal with because life is messy and relationships are messy. And I think that, for me, would make me feel like the more proud therapist if we looked at families more as a whole of a lot of different personalities and issues, and how do we work together instead of saying, oh, this is dysfunctional, therefore unhealthy, you need to leave. That creates more problems, I think, than trying to stay together and deal with those things that we struggle with. Kristen, you're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. Tell me what's your mind today.
It's actually your daughter, Kirsten.
Oh, this is my daughter, Kirsten, joining the party. Hello, family member.
You.
Well, okay, I can't wait to hear what sort of thing you're going to tell, story you will tell.
Well, it's not really a story, but you're talking about, you're trying to think about what characterizes our family.
Yes.
And what always comes to mind for me is the idea that we have an inner circle, and it really doesn't open up much for other people. And I recently got engaged and bringing somebody into the inner circle, and it's been very interesting to see the reaction that the family has had and that you have had, and how it's kind of made our family circle kind of shake up a little bit.
You're right. And I love that you brought up the family circle, the inner circle, because my dad, your grandfather, raised us to feel like, you know, we are the fort, we are the tribe, and that we always have each other's back. And so as we got married and had children, our tribes got a little bigger. But I think what you're saying, and I think your dad, my husband, would say, is it's hard busting into the family circle.
Very difficult. And I think it's almost harder being in the circle, reaching out to bring someone else in. So I just wanted to throw that out there to define us a little bit, and also just to bring a little family into your family show.
I appreciate that, because I was hoping we'd hear from some of the inner circle, because this is, as I've talked about since we started the Reluctant Therapist, my priorities in my life are as a wife and a mother first and foremost. And I feel like if we're going to have these conversations and share our stories, that my family needs to jump in and make it real. So I appreciate you calling, honey.
I'll come back again and say some more dirt.
Well, then we will screen your call. Thanks for calling. So, Brian, who's going to call in from your family and tell your secrets?
I have no idea.
You keep looking over at the phone with concern and anxiety.
Yeah, just waiting.
You can join our conversation, family or not, at 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we are talking about families. And as I mentioned before, we talked to my daughter. We know some ways that strong families function. We know some ways that things go well. There was research done that identified 6 different qualities of strong families, and they include appreciation and affection, commitment to each other, positive communication, spending enjoyable time together, a sense of spiritual well-being, and the ability, and this is key, the ability to manage stress and crisis well. And these qualities, when we find them in families, these families tend to do better overall. Doesn't mean that they're perfect. It doesn't mean that they never have an issue or a problem. But with these 6 qualities, they tend to be able to manage stress and crisis when there is a new member coming into the family circle, or someone has an illness, or someone's struggling with behavior issues. When these things come up, families that have appreciation and affection for each other and have a sense of commitment to kind of sticking through it through thick or thin, having positive communication. And we'll talk about that, because, you know, being able to discuss things that are uncomfortable is important in families. You know, not talking about the uncomfortable issues does not help families. We have to talk about the elephant in the room. We have to recognize when there's tension, and we have to be willing to hear things that people in our family have to say about us without being reactionary all the time. And it's much easier when you're older to get less reactionary, because I feel a little more confident. I know in my teens and in my 20s, anything that my parents said caused me to feel completely defensive right away. And so I have a little more grace for my teen and my 20-something when they want to be critical of the family, because I remember wanting to say my truth and having my parents quite often not want to hear it. So I try to be a little more open. I try to not be as reactionary. So using positive communication skills, as I mentioned earlier, that cookie model where we try to say something loving and positive and then give the critique and then end with something loving and positive sometimes help. Enjoyable time together. You know, we tend to start avoiding time together as a family because it can get tense and can be ugly and can be stressful. But when we start avoiding time together, we stop building memories, we stop building history, we stop working on our relationship skills with each other, and then we tend to quietly just see that relationship dissolve. And so avoiding time together is not going to heal or build a family. And that's really what it's all about, is being willing to go back and try again to understand your part of the conversation. What are things that you can do differently to make it easier for you to be with the family, or easier for the family to be with you? Hi, Pete. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I'm reflecting on a show on KCBX about 15 years ago where Guy Rathbun was interviewing a lady psychologist mm-hmm. on families, mm-hmm. family dysfunction.
Yes.
Partway into it, he said, wait a minute, let's define dysfunction in families. So what is dysfunction? And the psychiatrist said, two or more people.
Exactly.
It's a dysfunctional group, and I found that to be generally true.
Yes.
And it hurts a lot in the family, but, boy, it is difficult to break through people's filters, barriers, egos, and our own, obviously.
It is, and I think the reason it's so difficult, Pete, is that we rely so much on our family for our sense of well-being. When we're children, we rely on our family for our safety. You know, so we have a lot vested in these family relationships, and so we're very we tend to be very aware of any change in, you know, the relationship. You know, we're very easy to react because we tense up when something might feel negative or we might feel our security is threatened. And I think that's what makes it a challenge.
It certainly is.
I appreciate reminding me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just going to say my family is all gone, but I do recall having difficulties in communication with all of them. And it pains me today, and there's almost nothing I can do now. I wish I'd tried harder when everybody was around.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think one of the reasons this show means so much to me is that I don't want people to have regrets, and I think there wasn't anyone out talking about this 15 years ago when you heard the first comment about, you know, dysfunction being anytime there's two or more people in the room, because I think we tend to feel when we struggle in our families that it's unique to our family, and then it feels hopeless. And if someone had been able to say to you 15 years ago, go back in there, here's some tools you can use, here's a couple ways you can rejoin with your family, it might have made a difference. And I really can't tell you how much it means to me that you called to share that.
Thank you so much for your show. I love it.
Thanks, Pete. Have a great day. Hi, Meg. You're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind today?
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, two things. One is that our family is having a family reunion this summer. It's going to be all my parents. It's probably not all their offspring, but probably about 25 of us or so. Mm-hmm. And so some of us that are really into the stories of our family, mm-hmm. I loved hearing what you said about how people can learn from their family stories and
Absolutely.
How it can give them support and encouragement in their own lives.
Yes.
So that's going to be fun to play with. And the other thing was just a recent story, which was that I just had a birthday, and my son and his girlfriend sent me a whole raft of things. You know, normally he just sends me like one thing, and she added two others, and it was like, whoa, this is too much. I don't want to get into competitive gift giving here. So I sent her a text message because I wanted him to, you know, hear it too. And said, you know, kind of, well, like, ease off. You know, I tried to be nice about it, but you know, a little bit funny. And so then I got a response from her that just kind of said, well, I was kind of, like, really overwhelmed, and I was at the doctor's, blah, blah, blah. And it was just like a door opening, I felt like, because I'd met her but didn't really know her that well. And so I sent her a much longer response saying, you know, I really don't care about the material stuff. I just like to get to know you. You know, what are you passionate about? What are you good at? Who do you want to be? You know, and told her a little bit about what matters to me. And I got this marvelous response.
That's so you opened the door and really created an opportunity to build the relationship. And
that was wonderful.
I love that. And I love that you really spoke from your heart and you did it through writing. So you gave her a chance to read it and respond. Isn't it marvelous how texting has opened up a lot of communication lines for people?
I think it's great. You know, a lot of this was one, a little bit was texting, and then I moved on to email and I copied my son because I wanted him to know kind of what I was saying to her, and also saying to him that, you know, hey, I'd like to talk on this deeper level with you too. You know, it might happen, it might not happen, but
I love that, Meg. And you know, I'm going to give you a couple ideas for the family reunion. One of the things that's really fun to do is just simple. It's called the Do You Know game, and you make up kind of forms for everyone with a list of questions. Kind of where did the grandparents grow up? What were their names? Because it's amazing how many grandchildren don't know what their grandparents' names were because they called them Mammy and Pappy, right? So do you know their actual names? How did your parents meet? What's your birth story? story. Tell us where, you know, your family came from. What are some of the places we've lived? What's a tradition that your family has? And so then you kind of make it a competition, you know, how many gets the right answers and have little prizes for the kids. And having this game, the Do You Know game, and bringing it up at holidays is a great way of building that family history and that story and engaging the children so that they feel like they're a part of the history in a lot of really healthy ways.
That's neat.
So I encourage you to bring that out into the family and to make it something that happens more and more. And I wish you luck in your building your new relationship.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to be a part of the conversation is 805-781-3875. We'll be back to take more of your calls.
And you are listening to The Reluctant Therapist on Central Coast Public Radio KCBX. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, the Peabody Award-winning weekday magazine of contemporary arts and issues. Then at 4:30, it's Marketplace. Today on Wall Street, the Dow closed up 112 points. More on that and all the day's business news at 4 on Marketplace. Then at 4:30 on All Things Considered, the Supreme Court has hinted that it won't issue a sweeping ruling on same-sex marriage based on California's Proposition 8 case. Italy's highest court has overturned the acquittal of Amanda Knox, an American student who was accused of killing her roommate, and an ancient hunting ritual is making a comeback in Spain. Join Audie Cornish at 4:30 for All Things Considered from NPR News here on KCBX. The number to call in and speak with Elizabeth Barrett is at 781-3875. The number again is 805-781-3875.
Yeah, so we're talking about how can we make the most of our family relationships and how can we make the most of our family gatherings. As I mentioned earlier, we have a big family gathering this weekend to celebrate Easter and birthdays and an engagement. There'll be 25 of us. And I think one of the things that's gotten better in our family as we've all gotten older is that we've actually come to appreciate the fact that it's easy to love each other when everyone's on their best behavior. But you really know you're doing well as a family when you can find a way to love each other when someone's acting out or someone's struggling or someone's not being that easy to hang out with. And we really try as a family to focus a little more on that because we all have those behavior traits that annoy the heck out of each other. And we all have things that can really be a pick. And if we focus on those things, it'd be really easy to never want to spend any time together. But we're trying to work on this idea of finding ways that we can love each other and love things about each other and lead with that and not lead with the negative. We try. It doesn't always work because there's some things that are that pop out, things that are said. One of the things that I have been kind of the key for me with my family and is to before you speak to anyone in the family, think about what it is you're trying to get from this experience. Whatever is going to come out of your mouth, what are you hoping will happen once you say it? And what is your point? Are you saying this because you're trying to help them to do better? Are you saying this because you want to make your relationship stronger? Or are you saying this because it bugs you and you just feel like saying something mean? Because I think quite often we get into trouble when we just blurt out something that annoys us or we think that we need to say without really thinking about what the consequences of that comment are. You know, is it something that really needs to be said so that the relationship can go on? Then you probably need to say it. But if it's just something you're saying because you're feeling annoyed in the moment, then make sure you say that first. You know, I am sure that this is going to probably not come out right, or I am afraid that when I say this, it's going to hurt your feelings, but I feel like if I don't say it, there's going to be tension in our relationship. If you couch it like that first before you speak, you're going to go a long way to helping that relationship stay strong. So that would be the key issue for me this weekend, is always thinking about what is it that I'm trying to do when I make this comment. Hi, Lydia, you're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind today?
Hi, glad to be on. Thanks. I love your show.
Thank you.
Well, I was just calling. I had a recent revelation, and it came from an assignment that I was given in a class. I was in a nutrition class, and the teacher gave us an assignment to talk to our oldest living relative and just simply ask them what they ate when they were growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I called my grandfather, who's my oldest living relative, and was completely blown away by the stories that I heard. You know, I just asked him the simple question, what did you eat when you grow up? And he told me about how his mother would take a streetcar and a cab to get to the local market every week, and that his favorite, you know, snacks were like pickled pig's feet, and his favorite dinner was like pickled calves' brains. And I was so blown away because I realized, you know, when he met my grandmother, he, you know, just ate what she cooked, and her family cooked, you know, meat and potatoes diet, and that's what, you know, we know as grandma and grandpa's cooking. But I never realized that there's this whole other part of grandpa's life that I never knew, and that they raised bunnies on their farm and would eat them, and I mean, all these things, it was just so crazy. And what I realized too is that my grandfather, he has all these stories to tell, but he never just talks openly. You have to actually ask him questions, you know, specific questions. And so I recently put together this booklet that was just for him to fill out, you know, what was yours and grandma's first date? What was, and it was just things that he could do in his own time that he would write down in this book. But they were specific questions to answer because, like I said, he's not one to just to openly talk.
I think that's really true with a lot of the people in the older generations, that it was not, you know, customary to just tell your story, that we actually have to make an effort to get people to tell their story. And also we can create an environment in our homes, in our family, of storytelling by lead by example. Because as I mentioned before, you know, our families are top down. There is a hierarchy in families, and it is the elders of the family that set the tone of the family environment. They set the examples. They set the expectations. And families that get into trouble are those that actually lack leadership, that it's important to have those strong family leaders who kind of make sure the family gets together, that make sure that everyone dresses for dinner or sets the, you know, role models for how they behave in their life, the ethical values they have, passing those values on. And we need to tell those stories as elders, but we also need to encourage our children to know how to tell the story, to make sure that the elders aren't dominating the family dinner table and going on and on with their own stories, but taking the time to ask the children at the table to tell a story themselves. Because if we don't teach our children to be storytellers and to share their family history, they're never going to learn it. So it's important that the elders, you know, do two things. One, they lead by example, but they also encourage the next generation to tell their story, to develop their interests, to find the things that they're good at. And then the elders and the youngsters find a way to find commonality, find those things that are alike about you. Because it's really easy to find all the ways that we're irritated by each other. But what's really a challenge is to find those ways that we're alike and to find those things that are similar. You know, you might find that the people you go head to head with your family more often are those in your family that you're most like, the most hard-headed. I think my mom and my teenagers struggle with each other because they're both very similar in their personalities, and they're learning how to overcome that. And I think it's been a real kind of learning and growing experience for both of them. So, Lydia, I appreciate your call. It's about 10 minutes to 3. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Those of you that are trying to get in, this is your moment at 805-781-3875. Look forward to hearing your story or what are some of the struggles you have with family. Here's some things that we can do to make it a little easier when we do have family gatherings. One of the first things is don't leave so quickly, because as you know, we find that when things are stressful in the families, we tend to want to only go in for 10 hours or 5 hours or 1 hour for dinner and leave as quickly as we can. But it takes a while to get over some of the things that are tense in our family. It takes a while to reconvene. It takes a little while when you haven't seen each other in a few months to kind of get your stories organized or kind of find your rhythm with each other as a family. You know, in our family group, we've had opportunities to take trips where we're there for 3, 4, 5 days together. And we actually get closer and closer as the trip goes on, because things will kind of brew up or will come to a head early on in the trip, or there'll be, you know, arguments or disagreements. But then we tend to get better. So I really encourage, if you have an opportunity to spend a few days or more than just a dinner, to kind of get the rhythm together as your family, that will help. Another thing that helps is to put yourself in other shoes in your family. So instead of reacting just from your own place and your own experience, if you're struggling with someone in the family, try to put yourself in their shoes. What's going on for them right now? Do you have a sibling that has young children, and you know how it is to have young children running all around or not getting a lot of sleep? Maybe your sibling's really tired or stressed at this time, so to give them a little grace for that. Or maybe your parents are struggling with health issues, or, you know, dealing with other family members, and they don't have a lot of extra energy or extra grace to give you. So to be able to take a moment and try to put yourself in the other shoes of your family members might help. Let someone know when your feelings have been hurt. If something's said that really feels bad, say, I'm sure you didn't intend to, but that really hurt my feelings. Because maybe your family members don't know. Maybe they've always teased you about this, and, you know, since you were 12 years old. And now at 40, it's not okay anymore. And say, you know, I know you didn't mean anything, and it's old history, but it does hurt my feelings. And on the other hand, notice if you've said something that hurts someone's feelings. Pay attention to what's coming out of your mouth. And if you recognize that someone kind of gets quiet or backs off when they're talking to you, take a moment and say, gosh, did I say something that hurt your feelings? That's not my intention. Also, instead of expecting others to change, which is always our grand hope, right, Brian? We always have high hopes that someone else will change. Think about what you can do differently to change the situation. So instead of saying, I wish my, you know, brother didn't always say the same thing, or I wish my father wouldn't always pick on me about this, instead of always expecting difference in their behavior, what's one way you can react differently? What's one thing you can do differently to change that relationship or that dynamic that might be more successful? We talk about letting it go and accepting that some things are going to be what they're going to be, and how can you just live with that and love the good and let the bad go. And finally, I encourage you to allow your children to make their own relationships with your family, because quite often we get really defensive about our children. I know I feel the same way. If my brother or sister has a pick on something they're doing, or my parents, I instantly feel like, oh no, that's a reflection on me, or why would they feel that way? But if I can let that go and allow my children to create their own relationships, they're going to have more genuine relationships with their aunts and uncles. My oldest daughter, Kirsten, who called in, has a great relationship with my parents. She's developed that all on her own, and over the years has made an effort now to keep in touch with them and to be with them in time when we have not even family times, but she looks for them. Cousins have better relationships if they're allowed to develop their relationships on their own. So please allow your children to find their way in the family and encourage them to find their own personality. So it looks like we're coming to the end of our 50-minute session, Brian.
Yes, we are.
It's been another conversation with a reluctant therapist. We've talked about family. If you'd like to continue, please find me on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist on Facebook, or Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I always welcome your feedback. Next week, we will continue this conversation. But until then, I encourage you to tell your story. Connect with your family. And remember that you do have the answers inside you. You just need to find a way to hear them. So I thank you for listening and supporting Caring Talk for the Central Coast on Local Public Radio, KCBX.